I'm Chris.
And I'm Owen.
And welcome to the Dead Wargamer Society.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Today we have a very special guest with us. We have a Mr. Kyle Gibson of Temple of the West, which you may have heard of. They've been producing some wonderful new miniatures for the Legends line of Relic Blade. You also might know Kyle from the Confrontation community, and we're here to have him talk about Confrontation today. He helps moderate the Confrontation Fanatics 3.5 Facebook group, or you might have just seen his amazing paint jobs. He has a lot of wonderful painted miniatures out there on the social medias, so you might have seen some of those. So welcome, Kyle. Thanks for being here, man.
I appreciate it. That's quite the intro. I have to thank Ash, though, for letting me be a part of the Confrontation community, Ash Barker. You know, he started it all up, and he's tried to revive it from being dead, I think, kind of back in 2017. And, you know, a couple years later, like, I had just this passion kind of ignite for Confrontation as well. And, you know, I saw the community was there, but it just kind of wasn't doing a lot. So I kind of stepped in. I was like, hey, can I be admin too? And I got some, like, fun ideas for the community and try and, you know, resuscitate it back. And it's been a lot of fun ever since I kind of stepped in there. I feel like it's really re-energized.
I was a late joiner to the community as well. I remember, you know, earlier when I had looked at it, it was fairly inactive. But between yourself and there's another Owen out in the world, Owen Arillo, he posts up some awesome stuff that, I mean, it seems like it's highly engaged. People are talking about the game. And I mean, heck, I even have people in my town that are hitting me up trying to get games. So definitely a vibrant community.
Yeah. No, we'll call him Owen number two. Owen number two, he's a fantastic member of the community. There's very few people that I know of, at least that speak up regularly, that actually used to go and play in the tournaments. He used to, like, win in the tournaments, and he even got invited over to France to play over there. And he just has phenomenal stories about, you know, going to France and being with all the community over there. And it was just, he just kind of lived the Confrontation dream during the height of it. So he's really good to talk about. He's really good to talk about, like, tactics of the game with, because he's just seen it from so many different levels, and you've seen it from the tournament play. So, you know, I've never seen that before with the game. So it's fascinating to hear him talk about it.
Right on. Well, maybe we'll have to have him come on and talk with us about that too. But
yeah.
In the short term, normally we lead off with just a quick update on what we've been painting in the past couple of weeks. So, Kyle, what have you been up to in terms of painting?
Well, my painting log lately has been the Relic Blade line for the Legends. We've got pack 3, pack 4, and pack 5. Each pack has 4 different models in it from the Legends line. 2 of them are advocates, one's kind of a neutral character, and one is adversary. And if you don't know anything about Relic Blade, it's a really fun little skirmish game. Sean Sutter is the creator of it. He's an amazing creative guy. You should go check it out. These Legends characters, kind of oddball characters that people who pledged at a certain tier on his Kickstarters, you were able to create your own character. And he actually did card art for it and actually made, you know, playable stats and made cards for it. And you can buy the card decks for it. He never made the miniatures for it. And every Kickstarter he has, everyone in the comments is like, make the miniatures for the Legends. And he's just like, it's not really, like, going to further the story of what I'm trying to do. So that's where I kind of stepped in. I was like, hey, I'll make them. It sounds like fun. So I've been painting those up. I've got all the masters in. We're still working on production for that. I've also been painting Sean's Kickstarter that he just delivered, Storms of Corral, which is the newest Relic Blade Kickstarter. Other than that, I've got a bunch of Confrontation dumped on my desk, as I'm working through a lot of the Cadwallon miniatures, which we can discuss more about that later.
Nice. That's awesome. So, Chris, what have you been up to, man?
Actually, also assembling some Relic Blade. I also just got the Kickstarter in, along with a couple of the new characters, like the new elf longsword. And
the Lotus Song.
Yes, the Lotus Song, which is an awesome model. And the Dwarf Samurai, which is just a super cool model too. And then I forget what her name is, the small one that throws the angry beets.
The Cod Druid or Botanist?
Yes, the Druid Botanist. I'm like, I know all these came in. Yeah, so I got them all assembled and based. And then just while those dry up, because I use pumice, which unfortunately takes a little bit of time, I'm trying to knock out a bunch of mercs. So that's been the majority of my hobby stuff. What about yours?
I'm just about done with 500 points of Conquest. I'm doing a paint-along, a group of guys that are what are called vanguards for the game Conquest. Last Argument of Kings are painting 400 to 500 points every month, so I'm just painting along on social media, posting my stuff. It's been a lot of fun. I haven't done a mass battle game in a long time, but once that's done, probably going to take a week or two to take a detour into assembling and painting up some of my Storm of Corral Relic Blade stuff, so I'll seem to be swimming in the same stream there, but I also have to paint up some pigmen for someone's bachelor party, so working on that too. But yeah, no, I hope so. All right, having said all that, let's talk about what we're here to talk about, which is a little old game called Confrontation. We've mentioned this a million times in the podcast. It's one of my favorite games. I was able to beat Chris into doing it. A lot of our guests have mentioned it's one of their favorite dead games. So let's just get right into it. So I'll give a quick wiki-style summary of the game. So Confrontation was a fantasy skirmish miniatures war game designed by Jean Bay and the team at Rackham. The game was first published by Rackham in 1996. The game released in kind of an unusual way. The miniatures initially came with a miniature rulebook inside the blisters. It had all the rules you needed to play the miniature you got with the miniature. It saw a couple of different additions pretty quickly in the 5 years preceding, culminating in the early 2000 timeframe with a version 3.0, what people in America best know. It's the big honking Confrontation rulebook. The game stopped receiving support after Rackham Entertainment, the group that bought up the rights from Rackham proper after it initially shut down, closed in 2010. That was for Rackham Age of Ragnarok, not the original Confrontation game. Confrontation Age of Ragnarok, not Rackham Age of Ragnarok. The game was typically played with somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 20, 28mm miniatures. Typically played on a 2-foot by 4-foot, although there were some variability in that table size. And it was played using D6s. Kyle, I know you know a ton about the game. Anything you'd add on to that?
No, I would say, you know, just to anger the fans even more, the game actually, the proper game, the 3.0, 3.5, stopped receiving support, I would say, as early as kind of 2007. They stopped casting tons of the metal figures, and you couldn't get them anymore. So they were just trying to force everybody over to the plastics to try and drive sales. And that was just it was a miserable plan for them, and it all ended up how it ended up.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. So for people that have never heard of Confrontation and need like a quick elevator pitch on the game, I would say it is kind of one of the quintessential skirmish tabletop war games. It was one of the few things that I think really popped relative to GW games, and popped in a way that was robust through a couple different kind of trends and periods in the independent war game scene. So if you want to play a bunch of small fantasy miniatures, not quite role-playing level differences between your figures, but something much closer than, say, like a Warhammer Fantasy Battle, it's definitely something to check out. But what a lot of people care about when they first hear about a game is the background. Now, Kyle is an expert in this. So, Kyle, do you want to walk people through the background of the Confrontation universe?
Yeah, so Confrontation itself and the whole background of it, when you first look at the game, the art hits you. And the art just has this gorgeousness that it seems like only the French can do it this way. When I look at like their RPGs and their games and stuff, their art is just so, it has this kind of darkness to it, but it's still just so gorgeous and beautiful at the same time. So it just kind of draws you in through that. And the background is you have this nation that kind of started up from these gods that were battling each other, and they got bored of wiping out everything living on the earth. So they kind of went silent for a little bit. And then the nations kind of evolved on the earth and started kind of rebuilding, and civilization started up in different areas. And then there was just kind of downfalls in different parts of the nations that caused, you know, evil and darkness and dark magic to kind of start happening. So they all just started clashing and warring together, all these different factions and everything. And I'd be happy to go through all the factions and whatever else you'd like to talk about. But it all ends up with what's called the Ragnarok, which is the end of all end as far as wars go. And it's just, it's supposed to be the big battle at the very end.
Why don't you walk everyone through the three major factions and maybe then some of the different players in each of the factions?
Yeah, so if you're going to play the game, the thing you need to do first is pick a path. You got the Path of Light, Path of Destiny, and the Path of Darkness that you can choose from. The Path of Light They're kind of the protectors of the innocent. They're seeking perfection. They're, you know, serving the cause of peace, things like that. Factions within that, you have the Lions of Alahan. They're these big, bulking knights. They're kind of the big, powerful nation. They have high-level magician wizards. I think Ash called them in the video one time, like the America of the game. They're the goodest guys, goodest guys in good guy town, I think is what he said, which I've always hung on to that. That's just great. Another faction you have for Path of Light is the Griffins of Echelani. They're kind of your holy warrior crusader types. They worship the one true god, Marin. They're going around trying to convert people to, you know, worship Marin. If you don't, or if you have any sort of darkness in your soul, they're getting ready to get rid of you. They're kind of your holy warrior type people. Then you have the Celts of the Cessars. They're kind of the barbarian force, but they're the good barbarian force. They're made up of what are basically the oldest of the peoples in Arklash, kind of the first people to civilize and create civilizations on the nation itself. And they're still kind of holding true to their beliefs and their god of Danu. They haven't really established large cities and, you know, new types of armor and guns and weapons and things like some of these other races have. And then lastly, you have the Sinwal Elves, and in this game, they're kind of your high elf type army. They're exiled elves who have moved up into some ruins in the mountains and formed alliances with the dragons, which I don't know who else you would want to form an alliance with. I would definitely want to be friends with some Sinwal. They formed out of the Utopia of the Sphinx, which is another of the factions. It's a faction that never got built out. There's some arguing in the community about the Utopia of the Sphinx. Do they still exist? Do they not still exist? There was a war kind of in the past between them and the Ophidians, which is the snake race. And supposedly they were both wiped out, but the Ophidians came back because they lived underground. Could the Sphinx not have found a way to also live on? You know, who knows? But they had this like incredible technology and these amazing constructs and stuff that people are still finding like all around Arklash. They'll be digging in ruins and find this crazy construct with amazing magical powers. And, you know, they'll take it to some of the Sinwal that actually know how to, like, work on it and use it. And it's just fascinating. So after that, you got the Path of Destiny.
Before we get into the Path of Destiny, did we hit the Dwarves of Tir na b'or?
It's an interesting question, Chris, because they joined the Light later in the development of the game. So that happened in like one of the last English release Cry Havoc magazine. So depending on who you ask, they're either in Destiny or Light, because it depends on kind of like when you pick up
it. It's another controversial thing about the game. If you have the big clunky rule book, it's going to tell you Tir na b'or is part of Path of Destiny. If you have all the updates and later things, they're Path of Light. It's some of the things that make the game a little clunky. From that sort of standpoint, if you don't have the later material, then some of the stuff that you do have is, you know, it's out of date or something. But you can play them either way, depending on what your bias is. Obviously, whoever you're playing in the game needs to agree with you on what that is. Yeah. So I tell you what, we'll leave it up in the air and we'll just, but the Path of Destiny, basically, they're just kind of free peoples of the land. They try to maintain their independence. They don't really care for alliances. They're feuding with each other as much as they feud with the people of Light or the, you know, the people of darkness. So one of the factions that the original rule book says is the Tir na b'or. And we can just talk about that. They live up in the Aegis Mountains, however you want to say it. They kind of keep themselves mining and building up their fortress larger and larger. They don't really like to mingle with other people, but they will go to like trading towns like Cadwallon to do stuff. They love tinkering with their steam machines that you hope don't just randomly blow up on you. Let's see. After that, I'll talk about the goblins and orcs. An interesting design note about this game. Usually when you have goblins and orcs in games, they're inherently evil or bad. This was one of the first games that came out that just because you're a goblin or an orc doesn't mean you're evil, because they are following the Path of Destiny. There's a free people out there living their life. Yeah, you know, they have biases, but they're not inherently evil in the game. So I always thought that was interesting, because everything always points to them as being bad. So the goblins have three different sub-factions within them. You have the Strom, and they're kind of a civilized group of goblins. They have upgraded armor, and they have knights among their ranks, not so dissimilar to a human force, and they're a little bit more civilized to the group. Then you have the Urukin, and again, some of these pronunciations, other people do it different ways. I'm down in Texas. I don't have a lot of confrontation people around me. This is how I say them. So the Urukin are amazing. They're the samurai and the ninja goblins. And I've been collecting a huge force of that, and I can't wait to put it all together.
Nice.
Yeah, the Nodankar. They're kind of rougher around the edges. They like to experiment with mutations. There are some funky looking sculpts. They have like the pirate forces and things like that. Really cool little faction. The orcs of the game, they have two different factions as well. So I kind of like how they did sub-factions of different races to go along with them kind of moving throughout the country. They all just live in one area. The behemoth orcs are my personal favorite. They're just big, hulking orcs. And they live up in the behemoth mountains. They dress kind of similar to what you would think kind of ancient Mongols or tribes of kind of northern China look like. Just really beautiful and creative range of miniatures. The Brannikor orcs are the other orcs. They're just kind of your more traditional orcs that you would have in any game. They kind of live as a tribe. They have elders and mystics. The warriors are, you know, kind of your brute types. And, you know, there's hulking huge guys. And some great sculpts in there as well. Next, you have the Wolfen of Yula. They follow the god of Yula. You know, their symbol is the moon. And they're gigantic. When you put their sculpts up next to a human sculpt, you know, in real life, you're looking at it going, there's no way in the world a human has a chance. I don't care what kind of armor they have. You know, the claw on the Wolfen is as large as, you know, the guy's arm. So when you're staring at them next to each other, it's pretty funny. But they're just these giant biped kind of wolf race miniatures, and they're just gorgeous, gorgeous models. They had some beautiful concepts done for that range.
I would say that's kind of the one thing that I know people that have never played Confrontation have probably seen is someone somewhere has painted up a beautiful version of some of the Wolfen miniatures.
Yeah, it's a totally different concept with this game. I mean, these were just literally wolves, and supposedly, you know, the god Yola came down and blessed them with like higher intelligence, and all of a sudden they all stood up on 2 feet and went, hey, cool, let's put on some clothes and get weapons. So it's just totally different concept, and it's true. I mean, these sculpts just live on, and then look at how many games now have borrowed Wolfen later on after Confrontation has died.
Yep.
All right, well, just continuing on, I guess, we got the Devourers of Vile-Tys, which is a different breed of Wolfen. So the Vile-Tys, they broke away from Yola. There was some big, like, I forget what it was like a crater or something, came and hit the earth, and a god was in that crater or something like that, and told these Wolfen that god of Yola is a joke and, you know, don't follow them. And, you know, so they actually broke away from the god of Yola and those Wolfen and started kind of their own thing. And they're known for eating the flesh of their enemies and their really crazy S&M style dressing. So I think, you know, when you look at their models and, you know, you're just like, what are these like? Supermodel sculpts with like dog heads on them. What's going on here? But they definitely got some sexy in there, and I'm sure a lot of people appreciated that. Lastly, though, we'll just move on. Lastly, for the Path of Destiny is the Kinney Elves, Dakini Elves. I've heard it said 1,000 different ways. They're actually the oldest of the elves. They were the original elves that kind of came out from the Sphinx. Sadly, they never really got their faction filled out. They have enough where you can play them in a game, but they're just missing a lot of kind of core units and things like that. Because they represent sort of the wood elves in the game, if you will. They have a huge respect for kind of the elements and nature. Interesting fact, they are cursed now by the Akashani elf. The women die after falling in love now. So it's a real sad story for the beginning. Maybe that's why their faction didn't get filled out. They couldn't reproduce. Lastly, you got the Path of Darkness. And here's why I say it's different. The Path of Darkness, when you look at the factions that are in that, it's people who came from one thing and they kind of suck out something really evil through magic or through their own kind of devices. And they've always had kind of a hell bent on wanting to destroy everyone else and enslave everybody else and conquer the world.
I would agree with that, with the one exception of the Ophidians. I, to the best of my knowledge, we don't have like good guy Ophidians unless you count, you know, the ones that fall to light and become dragons.
True. In the Path of Darkness, you have the Celts of the Druun clan. They used to be Cessars. And the king of the Cessars kind of left the tribe and went off somewhere. And, you know, he never came back. And ever since then, there was kind of a split in the community of Celts. And the Cessars kind of stayed where they were at and kept worshiping Danu and all that. And the Druuns, they just disregarded all of it. They said, no, to heck with all that. We don't want to have anything to do with that anymore. We're going to go look for our king. And, you know, they're still out there, supposedly, you know, still searching for their king. They've shunned the gods of the Cessars, and they're practicing blood magic and human sacrifices. So they're just kind of a very dark, barbarian race now, if you will. Fun to play. They play very differently than the other Celts. I have not been successful winning with them, but I also haven't played a lot of games with them. But they are fun to play. Another faction is the Ophidians, like we were talking about before. They're the Snakes. They're a really old race. They were around with the Sphinx. They had a battle. They went underground, made all these tunnels and elaborate cities under the ground. They're highly intelligent. They are hell-bent on conquering Arklash for themselves. They are enslaving people and having the slaves fight for them. They are very evil little snakes, but they're really cool. It's another faction that wasn't really filled out very well. I have seen some of the concepts for stuff that was never done, and it's pretty amazing. So maybe that gets brought to light later. I don't think you've seen the last of the Snake Men. Dwarves of Midnor. It's a weird faction when you think about it from the scope of the game. When you look at it, it looks like a bunch of stuffed animals sewn together, kind of that resemble dwarves. So it's kind of like a fun, weird little dark faction. But they made up a story, and then there was a different story that they kind of made. So there's some confusion as to which one's the real story of where they originated from. One story says that a bunch of dwarves went down in a cave, and they made this pact to, you know, never leave each other's side or whatever. And they found this Hydra way underground, and they started to fight the Hydra. And three of the dwarves left, and one of them stayed and fought the Hydra, and the Hydra was impressed with his fighting skills. So I guess I can't remember exactly how the story goes. I think he either blessed him with these powers or cursed him with these powers. I can't exactly remember how that goes, but basically it was his ability to now take revenge on his brothers who ran away from him. And now, like, everything he touches with this sword, he can reanimate. So as he was walking through this kind of old dwarf graveyard, if you will, he was able to touch all these old dead corpses of dwarves and bring them back to life and reanimate them. So he's kind of like a necromancer. So it's just a weirder concept for a faction, but they're really cool looking sculpts, and I love painting them.
They are, I mean, gorgeous. I mean, almost up there with the Wolfen levels of the quintessential confrontation look. It is such a unique thing. And I mean, there were so many sculpts of the faction that were done so well. It's breathtaking. I would definitely say they're the Tim Burton or Malifaux Neverborn faction for confrontation.
Yeah, definitely. So creative, too. The creativity behind the concept design of so many of them.
Oh, yeah.
I love the addition of the little dolls. They have these little dolls all over them. And you know, the little dolls are even animated, too, with some sort of magical force. So, death by dolls. Then we have the Alchemists of Durs. So, the Alchemists of Durs came around. You had this really highly intelligent scientist who belonged to the Griffin of Aquilania. And he just kept, like, tinkering with this science. And it got to be the word the Griffins were not comfortable with what he was doing. So he fled out to the desert, and he took a lot of his followers with him and people that were, you know, doing the experiments with him. And he just went crazy out there in the desert. And he started, you know, doing all these augmentations to humans and orcs. And he created this substance called mutagen, which I always liken to Ninja Turtle ooze. And so he just kind of created like these superhumans and these super creatures with, you know, not only are they super strong, but they have just these crazy weapons and knives and things all over them that can just activate. The sculpts are just gorgeous throughout that range. Really creative stuff. Mm-hmm. Inspired a ton for later games. I've seen so much ripped off of that. But it's fine. It's deserving. It's a compliment, I guess. lastly, for the darkness, we have the ultimate, the undead, the ram of Acheron. They are your classical undead faction. They are founded by a guy named Fade Mantis, or Feud Mantis, however you want to say it. He was a baron from the Lions of Alahan, but he was also a member of a kind of a dark magic sort of organization known as the Order of the Ram. And he became obsessed with this dark magic and with having eternal life. And he was able to communicate to these three really evil gods, and they like made promises to each other. And in return, there was this giant portal to hell that was opened, and the armies of darkness just started flowing through it and it just unleashed chaos. And so ever since, they've been able to tap that, and they have within the faction, there's just these fantastic sculpts of necromancers and huge giant skeleton warriors, if you will. Gorgeous armor. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite factions. Everyone likes to like the bad guys. So I fall right in line there. And we can also throw in the Akishan elves. They're a faction as well. We got one sculpt before everything kind of went belly up. But they broke away from the Dakini elves. They are spider elves, if you will. I almost think Jean Bay struggled with how to represent them physically. The concepts that I've seen for the faction were okay. I think he never brought them out because they were mentioned way early in the game, before some of these other factions were ever even mentioned. So they should have been brought out way earlier. But I just think he never could quite figure out how he wanted them to look. And everything kind of died before he was able to realize it. But he did get one sculpted out. She's creepy. Creepy as hell.
How do you say her name? Is it Soufflé? I've never been able to figure out how you actually say that.
Exactly. That's my answer to that.
You know, since we're going through and hitting all of them, do you want to just briefly touch on what Cadwallon is?
Yes. So Cadwallon is New York City is what it is. It's this giant melting pot where pretty much all the factions can come together. It's almost in the center of the world of Darklash. And there's a big port there. There's all these different layers to the city. There are all these different fiefdoms or fiefdoms, however you want to say it, to the city. Each one is controlled by its own lord or mayor or however you want to put it. And there's an upper part of the city as well where the Duke of Cadwallon lives. He's the big main man. They really developed the lore of Cadwallon and made the whole RPG system out of it. They even created three whole books about Cadwallon. Two of them made it to English. The third one never made it to English, but it has been translated by some awesome members of our Facebook group. So that file is available if you guys ever want it. But the book itself is extremely hard to get, the third book. It's called Secrets 2. And I have a version of it. It's damaged. Anyone out there listening, if you have a version in good shape that you want to give me or sell me, let me know. They just didn't make that many of them. It's this really fantastical city. It's highly, highly developed. When you look at the artwork in the book that shows Cadwallon, it's just, you can just get lost in the artwork, just looking at the city and the structures and the buildings and the pathways and how it was laid out. They really did a great job. They had some amazing writers and kind of world builders that put that all together. So I got to give it to them for that.
Yeah, no, I mean, we had Greg Boisbillaud on the last episode to talk about AT43, who actually worked at Rackham. He mentioned, and I hadn't noticed it, I checked the PDF I have of it, and it's true. Literally every page in the Cadwallon RPG rulebook has a different background.
Yeah.
If you go in and check the credits, they had people doing art for it that were concept artists for the Lord of the Rings movies. Like, they brought in some firepower for it. It is outstanding.
Yeah. Well, you know, just a small plug for something that we're doing at Temple of the West. We have a partnership that we have formed with Gary Chalk. Gary Chalk was one of the artists of Cadwallon. He's an old Warhammer artist as well. He has an archive of stuff that he created for Rackham that never made it to Rackham before they died. And it's phenomenal. We're going to start bringing it out, and we're going to start creating miniatures based off of it. We already actually have two sculpts that have been finished. So we're using his concepts, which is Rackham. We're actually using Unique Fusiere, which is ex-Rackham sculptor, and he's sculpting it all. And then we actually have an ex-Rackham painter, Theory, from TH Miniatures. We'll be doing our painting. So from beginning to finish, it's pure actual Rackham stuff, even the concepts. So I think the fans are going to like it. I'm excited to bring it out. And I think everyone's going to geek out when they see this artwork.
That's awesome. I really, really, really want to come back to that, because I know Temple of the West is not the only group of guys doing that. So we'll definitely circle back to that towards the end. But in the short term, I did want to just, you know, talk a little bit about the actual rules of the game. I think listeners probably have a pretty good impression now that there's a lot of background. There are a lot of different options for armies in the game. It was a pretty, you know, well-expanded, well-described universe. But, you know, of course, we're talking about a tabletop war game. So then the question becomes, how did the game actually play? Obviously, I don't think we can really do justice to showing the game via podcast form just by reading the rulebook or giving an overview. But I will kind of give people a flavor of what it was like to play. So I have some notes here on kind of high points of the game, in my opinion, or things that were a bit unique. But I'm going to start by just walking people through what a turn would look like in just terms of a very rough outline. So at the beginning of the game, you'll have your army. You'll have a number of figurines, most of which have their own card. Some of the trooper models, you can take multiples per the same card. You set up an activation order. So you take your cards, put them in an order in which you want to activate them. Then you roll up to see who has initiative. There's actually a stat that you can use from one of your fighters on the table called discipline. Basically, how good you are at controlling your army. You roll a d6 and add that to that stat. Whoever goes higher has the lead for the turn. Then you take turns activating the top card of your stack. You can look at that card and either hold it in reserve if you have the lead. Basically, you won the discipline roll. You can hold up to two cards in reserve. If you didn't get the lead, you can only hold one. So you can either play or hold, pass, go back and forth. Eventually, though, models have to start taking turns. So you go back and forth activating models. When a model activates, it can either move or shoot or cast a spell, call down some miracles if they're a priest, but you're going to do something that's not combat. You can charge into combat, you can walk into combat, et cetera, during this phase two. Once everyone's gone, then you get to combat. Player who takes the lead starts splitting frays. I'm not going to go into too much on what that means, but basically, if you have a bunch of guys all in the same combat, you can split up who's fighting who. Then you go back and forth actually doing fighting. Let's stick with just one model fighting one model. Each model will get two dice in general. Special rules can modify that they can assign to either attack or defense. But then you make an initiative roll. So each model will have an initiative value. You roll a d6, add it to that. Whoever wins will get to go first. Once you figure out who has initiative, the player who doesn't have initiative will assign their dice to either attack or defense, and then the person who won will do the same after that. You start with attack dice, so the model that won the initiative will start attacking first. If there's any defense dice for the character that's defending, they'll get a chance to defend. You roll the dice if you have defense dice, you don't if you don't. You have an attack value, you add a d6 to it, compare it to the defender's defense value, and d6 if they have it. If you win, you hit, then you go through and wound, strength value versus what's called the resistance, basically their armor, and then you figure out if you damage them. Once that's all done, if the defender's still standing and they have an attack dice, they're going to swing back at you. You kind of go through that back and forth. That's kind of the rough cut of how the game plays, which isn't that complicated, but there are a million and one special rules that influence how that all comes together. It's a surprisingly simple system, but the extras that hang onto it, which make it really interesting, also start adding up to a lot of complexity. Magic and what's called divination, basically it's magic if you're a priest, are very, very, very well drawn. There's a lot of particulars to them that are designed to really enhance the verisimilitude of the setting. So if you are a character that's associated with the Griffins, you might have an affinity to fire magic due to, you know, association with Merrin. As a result, you can cast fire spells. You'll generate gems of fire to cast spells. If you're trying to counterspell that, you can do that in a couple different ways, but one of the more common ways is if a model has the opposite element of fire, which is water, you can just spend gems of water to cancel it out, which was kind of a cool, very flavorful setting, but it added a lot of rule weight. All of which takes me to kind of a point about the game. It's really cool. It does a lot of really, really interesting things, but in my opinion, it can be a bit clunky compared to a lot of other modern games. Chris, I know that you just kind of got into the game in terms of the mechanics. What was your impression of the game coming to it as a new player?
I don't know if I'd use the term clunky. I think looking at like a few of the game systems that are similar to this, I'd probably go with crunchy.
Okay.
You know, like there's a lot of rules, like you said, particularly when it comes to magic. I was kind of surprised when I got the rule book in my hands and I'm like flipping through. I'm like, all right, little bit of story. All right. Like little bit of basic rules. Couple pages about like universal abilities, and then like holy crap, you know, somewhere between a quarter and a third of the rule book is magic and divination. Like it is a huge chunk, and it makes sense because they actually give you all of the spells for all of the factions available. So it's almost like if you took, you know, an Age of Sigmar, and you decided to take your available spell list for every single faction in the game and put it into the basic rulebook. You know, like, and like you said, the way that things kind of oppose each other are a little bit different. What kind of made it difficult for me early on is, you know, army building is set so that you have to have a percentage or less be characters and everything else is troops. For some factions, characters are worth too many points for a single character for you to even take it in a basic army. And that kind of threw me for a little bit because like initially I was looking at Vile Tis and there was like a super cool character and I think he's like 200 points. So when you have to keep your characters to 50% or below, that means you'll be playing a 400 point game just to get him in. And you know, at the time, Owen and I were talking about like, hey, let's try to keep it small and skirmish. We're going to play between like 150 and 300 points. So it's like, oh, so, you know, my favorite character in this range, I'll never be able to play it, you know, and similar thing with certain Wolfen. And it puts some limits on list building that I think if you're looking at it from a more modern day game perspective, it's a little bit more work. You know, it's not, oh, pick five models. Go, you know, like pick these things, go, you know, like it's definitely like a much more well thought out kind of take on that. And then it complicates it a little bit more too when you start to look into allegiances, you know, which just reminds me again of older games with like, you know, the old fantasy charts of like where your allegiances, you can take X of this, you can take X of that, but it affects this and affects that. So it, you know, when you're jumping in and you have a tendency to dive in like head first and like it's a lot of information to absorb all at once. I think, you know, overall though, after getting a chance to just really sit down and digest it, as well as, you know, kind of just checking out some of the videos and getting some community feedback, because like things like talking to Ash about it, watching how the game gets played on the table, a lot of things are a lot more intuitive once you have an idea of what's going on. And, you know, like the card, you know, kind of the card activation deck makes it very interesting. And the last thing is it's kind of funny. I know there are people developing an app to kind of address this. But, you know, for people who play a lot of newer games, you can kind of get spoiled. You know, you get a lot more used to every single thing being on your card. You know, so looking at a game like Dark Age, you know, if your character can set a model on fire, the rules for burning are on the back of the card. You know, like if you can knock someone prone, those rules will be on the back of the card. The confrontation cards will mention general rules that you then have to reference the rule book in order to understand what that does.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is showing the vintage in which it was created. I agree. I think crunchy is probably the better word to describe it. I don't want anyone to hear me say it's a little clunky and think I don't love it. It's one of my favorite war games, but it is definitely more of an investment to pick up than a lot of modern games are.
Yeah, I mean, I think clunky can sometimes go to describe some of the games like that we don't play. You know, some of the games that definitely like came out failed, you know, like where it's like, man, you know, here's this rule to do a thing. Like, here's the wording for the rules of cover in this game. And it's like 2 pages long. Man, you know, like they could simplify this in 2 sentences, you know, and I think that's what like clunky refers to, where you're like, you're reading all this thing. You're like, man, you took 2 hours to describe something that you could have just told me in like 2 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Any thoughts on this, Kyle?
Yeah, I would just say it's like y'all said, the core mechanics is really good. The card deck and, you know, how your cards are hidden and you pull them out. Really ingenious mechanism. Initiative is well thought out in the game. There was just a lot of firsts that this game started that you see in later games. They kind of stole some of those things. When I'm always trying to get people into the game, and I'm always trying to get people in the game, it's not always successful. I live in East Texas, okay? So there's not a huge confrontation base here. It might just be me and my sons. But I'm always trying. And the easiest way to do it is don't include magic. Just get some...
Yep.
Get some heroes out there, some characters, and a couple, you know, just regular little fighters, and start whacking each other back and forth. You know, keep it like objective based and things like that. You can layer in the magic later because it is challenging, especially because so many characters came with their own special rule sets and their own cards that aren't even referenced in the actual rule book. So, you know, you have to read theirs, and some of their rules might actually even contradict what it says in the rule book that they can do, but the cards that come with the characters supersede the rule book. And that's where it just starts getting, you know, I like your word crunchy. You kind of have to have all of this. And one of the things that would have benefited the game immensely is if they had not spent all their money on their gorgeous magazine, Cry Havoc, and instead focused all that energy and artistic ability into making army books for the factions, which they later started to, but for the other game that they created, and they were okay. They had a lot of the lore in it, but really nothing to do with army building and things like that, and had no support in them at all for 3.0 or 3.5.
What really would have helped them with the magic, which granted would have been light years ahead of its time, is, you know, back when I was playing Infinity more often, around like when N2 was like a really big thing and just come out, there was an app just for the hacking programs. Like, all it did was like, oh, you're equipped with this device. Okay, you can use these programs, you know, or you're equipped with this device, you're targeting this type of model, you can do this. And having something like that where it's like, oh yeah, you know, I'm playing this Wolfen model. What do I have access to? And it just populates the list.
It looks like that's what the app that's being building is going to be able to do. And it's a lot of work for this game to be able to connect all those dots because, you know, I really admire the guys that are working on it because they, man, they're having to connect a lot of dots from different supplements and things like that. And then all these character cards that had all this other information on them that they're having to pull off of. That's really the big thing, is having to pull all that information off the cards themselves. Because none of that's in the book. That's what made it hard. There's a lot of people that griped about that because they're like, so if I don't buy that character, I don't know what that lore is. And, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, because his lore's on that card. So,
It's also been funny, too, because I was talking to Ash about it, and he's like, yeah, you know, I'm trying to remember exactly what he said and not paraphrase it, but I don't think I can. But, you know, it was one of those, you know, he was talking about how distribution was difficult with the game at times. So people who are trying to get it here in like, or for him in Canada, but for us in the States, you know, a lot of times product was coming in and it wasn't even in English. So players at the time would just know what certain words meant. Like, oh yeah, like I know what this what this French word means for the rules. So that's definitely a huge task for someone to be like, oh yeah, not only did I find the cards, but either I've translated all the cards to work in the app, or I managed to track down images of the English cards.
Yeah, English was just never really a priority for them, and I think that was another fail from John Bay. They focused more on the French, and they had a huge, huge group of players in France, but my gosh, the English-speaking world is so much larger, and you just had to deal with poor translations and things like that to get into the game. I think that might have been a turnoff for a lot of people as well.
Yeah, it's a shame because I look at what they did and the time they did it in. I mean, they were cranking out hits in 1999 when the comparison you'd make in the States for like state-based games that were competing against the GW were things like Vor the Maelstrom or Clan War. And just the comparison yeah. in concept art and miniature painting, like
oh, yeah.
night and day. like they would mop the yeah. floor with them. So... Yeah, it is a shame. But, speaking of kind of like forward-looking statements, we talked a little bit about not really loving AOR. If Rackham had made a Confrontation 4.0, you're someone that's played a lot of the game. What would you like to see change from 3.5?
So there's obviously been a ton of debate about this in the forums. I'm of the school that I really wouldn't change a lot of the rules as far as how the core mechanics are, moving and, shooting and things like that. I think it's all done really well. For me, it's a reorganization of the rule book. The rule book is sort of the disaster. You're flipping from back here to over to here to here. There's not the index. Where's the index? And then people are going to crucify me, when they hear this, but
that's okay. Owen gets all the hate mail.
Okay. Well, that's perfect. I would cut down on the amount of abilities that are available. I think there's too many, and I think there's a few too many spells as well. I think you could cut some of those because some of them seem pretty similar enough to where you could just have one of them. And I think that will help streamline it. And, because the best thing about games is when you get familiar with it and what that ability is, it says it on the card and you already know what it is. Well, there's just so many of them in the game. I'm constantly still referencing everything. I have to look back. What was that again? Oh, yeah, it was when you could do that. Okay. Other than that, army books. Oh, army books would be so helpful. Take all the information that was on all the special cards that came with characters, put it in their own factions books so everybody has access to all of it without having to purchase every single miniature in the game like I have. So that's really the changes I would make.
Right. So the Confrontation community's been alive for over a decade now, and the game hasn't had official support from anyone. I know a couple of people have tried to pick it up. Do you have any suggestions on ways for people in other games to keep the same level of enthusiasm up for, maybe one of their favorite games that isn't around anymore?
You just got to get in there and be the person who stirs the pot. When I jumped in on the Confrontation Facebook page, I immediately, started up a painting competition. There was no winner, really, but it was themed. So it was just getting people back involved. And I started painting a massive amount of stuff myself just to kind of lead the charge. It got people kind of re-energized in it. And, you just got to get in there and shake people. Once you start getting enough people painting stuff again, it starts getting put all over Instagram. You get more people coming in. They're looking at the stuff. They're starting, especially for Confrontation, it's easy because the miniatures are so gorgeous. People are drawn to the miniatures before they're drawn to the game. And you start, you probably look out and see it too. I see Confrontation miniatures all over the place. I just started playing Rangers of Shadowdeep. And there's several people that have built out their entire warbands with like griffins and things like that. And nice. It's really fun to see that. And of course, people are always like, where are those from? And they're like, oh, it's from Confrontation. Oh, where can I buy those? Well, good luck. It's kind of it's either eBay or the Recasters in the Ukraine. It's one of the two. But you can go over to that Facebook page and So they just kind of get sucked in. But it's a growing community still. You know, when I took over, I think there was about 1,100 people on the page, which is a lot. But, you know, it's probably been a year now, and we've added an extra 600. And we still, on my phone, I get between probably 1 and 4 people a day that ask to join.
Nice.
And usually they're real people. You know, you get the spammers in there that are just trying to join every page in the world. And I don't know what they're doing. But yeah, no, it's real people. And I try to keep it pretty active and going. And we haven't done any painting competitions lately. I just finished building my house, so I've been a little had no time. I've been painting walls instead.
No,
but Owen's kind of taken over and led the charge with doing kind of mock build-outs of armies and stuff, and that's been really fun for the community. So having other people step in and take the reins over too is good. So if you get a good core group of people that are committed, I feel like they can really spur the community on.
You're pretty involved in the community. I haven't heard anything, but I figured I'd ask. I know that there was an attempt to revive Confrontation again recently. There was a Kickstarter. Prior to that, there was the Call Me or Not attempt. Do you know if anyone's going to try to pick it up again?
So I actually don't think it can be picked up again. And here's the reason. Stellar Licensing, who currently has what's left of the game, and I say that because there actually is no license anymore. Copyrights have all expired for everything.
Damn.
Rules, everything. Nobody kept them up. Nobody, paid the fees and kept it all up. The only thing that's still in force are a few trademarks for some of the names like Confrontation and Arclash and Cadwallon.
Okay.
And that's really all that Stellar owns is the trademark rights. And that's it. And so they went and did a Kickstarter. Oh boy, I'm sure y'all have heard about the Kickstarter. it was pretty much a scam the whole time. They used the whole robbing Peter to pay Paul type thing for a lot of their RPG systems, and they ran into a situation they couldn't overcome. It was their first miniatures game, and I think they just vastly overestimated their abilities to be able to do anything with it. And they pretty much just took 500,000 euros and did absolutely nothing with it and kind of just ran off with it. So they have several lawsuits against them now. I'm sure it's going to end up real great for them. the community has absolutely no love for them, but they still own those trademarks. And I actually tried to buy them from them about a year and a half ago. I spent 8 long months of my life going back and forth with these idiots and, my attorneys and stuff. It was a legit deal. And they just wanted the moon for it. At the end, it just wasn't worth it for a game that needed to be revived. And, my goal wasn't to bring it back and be, the foremost game in the world, because I just never saw it happening. I just wanted the ability to do actually what I'm doing now, but be able to use the names. That was my whole goal. But so, like, with what I'm doing now, I can't use some of the names because of the trademark issues there. But everyone will know what they're for.
So on that note, I mean, I obviously Temple of the West. I'm familiar with some people like Rooted Designs and Cerunos. TH Miniatures obviously has started to get in a little bit of this game. Anyone else you'd shout out for people that are making, shall we say, inspired by Confrontation Miniatures?
Yeah, the ones you mentioned are pretty much the guys. There's also a guy, his name, I'm probably going to butcher his last name. I'm from Texas. We don't know how to say foreign stuff. His name's Dennis Ganilla, something like that. He's really active on the forum, and so is his brother. They're both diehards, and he does some really fantastic sculpts as well. Yeah, everybody's trying, and we've waited kind of forever to see if somebody's actually going to pick the game up and do anything with it. And the last people have had it just fumbled the football so many times. So it's kind of like the community is just taking it into their own hands. I'm trying to be a little more organized with it, so that's why I actually got with Gary Chalk, the actual illustrator of the game, and found out he had stuff that hasn't actually even been produced yet, but that was done at the time. So having that stuff done, I feel like just legitimizes it. And, we're going to bring it out. It's actually going to have playing cards with it. We're going to get with the community and come up with profiles that work. So it's a little bit of a way to keep it going. But I'm also going to make sure that the sculpts, you know, work well for other games as well. I realize it's a dead game, and it's very expensive to make miniatures. A lot of people don't know that. So making them for a dead game is scary. So that's why I'm also going to be making them so that they work well with a lot of the other newer systems that are out there that I play as well. So nice. You've seen them pop up all over the place, hopefully.
Awesome. And Chris, I'm wicked sorry, man. I totally stole your thunder and blew past probably what's going to be the funnest part of the episode. Do you want to kick us in for a favorite miniature?
Kyle, you want to start out with this one? You have a favorite?
When I saw that, I got scared when I saw it on the sheet. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to break it out. Favorite by path.
Okay.
Ooh.
So Path of Light, favorite miniature. And one of the first ones I ever saw that got me into it is the Inquisitor number one. He just has this monumental armor and this stance where he's got one foot up on some skulls with this massive sword. And he has just the token Griffin shoulder pad, pointy shoulder pad, 1980s armor. It's just amazing. And his face shield and all that just are screaming Griffin. But I've always thought he's so cool. Path of Destiny, the Warriors of Stone from the Orcs of the Behemoth. Oh, such gorgeous sculpts. So well done. I fall in love with all the little trinkets they have on their backpacks and all that stuff. Super fun to paint. You just wonder, man, these guys are just lugging their whole house with them. But they're going to war and they're gonna do it. So
that's battle sausage, sir.
Exactly. It's needed. It's fuel. Path of Darkness, my favorite that I always loved is the Black Paladins of Acheron. Such cool models. I have a ton of them because my goal is to put together, you know, an entire unit of them so I can use it like in Dragon Rampant or something like that. But yeah, I've always loved those sculpts. And I'm going to throw another one out there because I can't discriminate. For Cadwallon, Captain Kellion Darroch. Man, he is a cool dude with his giant warhammer. And I'm going to say he's my favorite from Cadwallon until some of our new stuff comes out. It's just a shameless plug there.
I like where that's headed. I like where it's headed. Chris, how about you, man?
That's also like a super tough one because I have favorite models that I don't even own. But it was really tough. Like, you know, I was having such a hard time picking an army. Like it was bad. It took 2-3 weeks probably of like sitting down with a notepad and just looking through sculpts, being like, oh, this sculpt is cool, and then you try to build a list around it and then it just didn't work and it was like, all right, let's start again. But like I mentioned before, I was super on board the Devourer's train, both for Sharat the Warlord.
Yeah,
because it's a huge, like, hulking warrior model wolf with just awesome looking armor. Lots of little cool, like, embossed detailing to each one of the panels. And also, I'm trying to remember what her name was. Nemthis? She was a magic user. She had a gigantic scythe with, like, the one foot up, you know, and resting the big, like, maw on her, like, forearm. It was, just a super cool resting sculpt of a model. But unfortunately, I couldn't figure out an army list that I wanted to make work with those models. So for the models and the faction that I chose, which are going to be Wolfen, I actually super duper liked Askar, but yeah. I think he's 202 points. So you can't actually play him until you hit games of, you know, 500-ish. So
I'm going to go back to that after we finish hearing all these. It's great. I have a point to make about that. Go ahead.
Which leads to the model that's going to be in almost every single one of my lists, whether it was 150, 200, 300, 400, which is the Watcher. The Watcher is such a cool model, and it's definitely one that I saw way before I even knew what Confrontation was. Like, I saw it in painting competitions. It is huge. Like, it is such an absurdly gigantic model for what's not a gigantic army game. I can only imagine, especially back in the day before they had things like Colossals and, you know, Titans and stuff like that. I'd say he's at least 5 to 5.5 inches tall, and he's crouched over. Like, it's a crouched wolf resting position like, has scars, has all these little, like, trinkets that he clearly, like, was bringing into the field, and has this huge, just, like, wicked-looking spear with all these barbs sticking out of it. It just, there's a lot of character, especially for when you consider that this isn't a sculpt from the past 5-10 years. Like, this is a stupendous-looking model. What about you, Owen?
I'm way more definite than you guys. I definitely have a favorite. It is the Nefarious clone for Durs. It is the 1,000 miniature that Rackham made. It is a just big, honking, angry, giant sword-wielding clone for the Durs people. It's standing on a pillar. It's almost my definition of a perfect sculpt. I love so much about this game, but if I had to pick a favorite, it captures so much of what made Rackham really incredible at what they do. The artwork was beautiful. The color choices were just stupendous. The interlocking armored plates makes something that is brutal and menacing also look simultaneously really elegant and beautiful. It hit every single note that I wanted it to hit, and I love it.
Nice.
I'm sorry, man. Kyle, you said you were going to circle back to something?
Oh, I was just going to mention, because you were talking about the points where you couldn't even build your force out of the guy. One of the things Confrontation always struggled with is it wanted to be a mass battle game. You know, they created the original Ragnarok, which was a mass battle game for it. But I know we were saying the game was crunchy, but Ragnarok was clunky. Like,
yes.
That game is thick. I've made it through, like, the first 2 pages, and I'm like, I don't even want to learn this game. I just don't. It's just too much. And I'm one to look at. I'll look at some pretty complex war games. I'm into historic systems, too. And, you know, I'll look at some pretty complex stuff. But that one, I was like, I don't need it in my life. So they always struggled, and they always wanted all their miniatures to work with everything, right? They wanted it to work with Confrontation. They wanted it to work with Ragnarok, and they wanted it to work with Cadwallon. So, you know, later on, you'd get cards for everything with each model. Also very expensive to do. And so you'd have these characters that, yeah, you'd have to play a pretty big game of Confrontation to actually include them. But you could play them at Ragnarok, and they worked out really well. Because if you're playing Ragnarok with a bunch of, Wolfen against, you know, rank and file after rank and file of Griffins coming at you, that guy now looks pretty sweet. And you need him to be pretty big and powerful, because you got so many units coming against you, you know, if you're playing against a human race. So that's one thing the game always kind of struggled with is, you know, Jean Bay, he in the Cry Havoc magazines, when you look at the pictures, most of the pictures are pictures of Ragnarok sitting out on the table. Because it's just so gorgeous to have them all lined up, huge, just waves of them. They're all painted and just beautiful. But that wasn't Confrontation, that was Ragnarok. So he loved the pictures and the concept of the big giant battles and wars. But for the game itself, you know, it's a small skirmish game. Mm-hmm. Having these really expensive characters, it's tricky to build around.
So moving along, just to get into our last couple questions here. Other than Confrontation, do you have a favorite Dead War game?
Yeah, it's hilarious that you guys brought AT-43 on the one right before me. Yeah. That's one of my favorite Dead War games. Confrontation is obviously my absolute favorite Dead War game. I will say another Dead War game that's, I guess it's a war game. It's kind of a war game, kind of a board game. HeroScape. Are y'all familiar with HeroScape? It's got like the hex terrain that you kind of build up. It came out.
I'm more familiar with the terrain tiles than the actual game.
Yeah. So it's super rules light. I call it a beer and pretzel game. It's the best gateway drug to get your friends into war games, because it gives them the concept of war games and miniatures games without being deep at all. And it was actually one of the things that really got me kind of even more into war games was playing HeroScape. So I'll put that on the list.
I love it. I actually haven't played a lot of HeroScape, but I definitely have heard it's a good gateway drug.
And lastly, I mean, is there anyone that you want to give a shout out to?
Yeah. So when I saw it on your sheet, I was like, oh boy, I better make a list here because I can't leave anybody out. I have to give a shout out to my wife, first and foremost, for putting up with me and my shenanigans and everything that has to go on with all this stuff. My game group, I'll give a shout out to them as well. They have to hear me drone on about these games all the time as I try to get them into it. I'll give a shout out to Gary Chalk, just an amazing creative guy. Super, super British. Love it. Everything you'd want a British guy to say, like little words like bits and bobs. Okay, we don't say that in America, but I love everything about it. He's fantastic to work with. My sculptors, Unique Fusier, Stavros Iliatis, both of them super talented. I'll give a shout out to Sean Sutter for allowing me to do the Legends line. That was really, really fun to do. And I'll give a shout out to Malev too. Malev keeps the community in line and just encourages everybody. I'll give a shout out to Ash Barker. He's fantastic, as everybody knows. Temple of the West has actually got a project that we're doing with Ash.
Nice.
No spoilers yet, but you'll get to see it in Blaster number 4. So be looking for that. Finally, I'll give a shout out to the Confrontation Fanatics Facebook page. The amazing talent and knowledge on there. These guys are just fantastic, and I love how much of old Rackham employees have actually joined up and are active on the forum. It's really, really fun to have them on board, because there's such a wealth of knowledge about the game, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. That's my long list of shout outs.
I was going to say, being that you didn't mention it, we're going to tell people to check out Temple of the West. Obviously, yeah. Owen and I are both big fans of Relic Blade. So there's definitely some cool sculpts for the Legend models. I'm excited. Of course, I'm going to butcher it, but Karinos? Karinos? One of the two.
Karinos.
It's a super cool sculpt. You can check out Temple of the West on Facebook, and they have, you know, the previews of the newest Legends. Who knows? Maybe it'll be out by the time this drops, or it will be coming out soon. Her sculpt looks really cool, and it's a cool character. There really hasn't been any other vampire stuff, really, in Relic Blade, so it's a neat little...
Yeah, edition. She almost kind of has like a drow, almost, kind of feel to her as well. So she's really cool, and I think we nailed it pretty good from the card art.
Yeah.
And that's what we were going for with all these. We're just like, you know, we get the sculptor, we're like, match the card art. It has to have maximum fidelity. So you know, he did that. A lot of it, you know, us kind of making up kind of what the back would look like. We try to make them all pretty interesting like that.
The one you took artistic license on that I love, and I think you nailed it, was Flint and Pig. I love how you sculpt that.
So literally, if you know the backstory of Flint and Pig is it's based off of Lone Wolf and Cub. Okay.
Okay.
If you know the lore of Lone Wolf and Cub, it's a Chinese kind of legend. The Mandalorian was actually based off of the legend of Lone Wolf and Cub. So we actually took a picture from the Mandalorian of him walking with little Yoda in his sack at his side, and we matched it with Flint and Pig. Because the card art for Flint and Pig is awesome, but the pose doesn't make sense for making a miniature. So we did take some license with that, and I think we came up with something pretty cool.
Oh yeah.
Really excited about that. But yeah, you can find all this and, you know, sign up for newsletter at templewest.co, not .com, .co. We were too cheap for .com. And you know, we got a lot coming out, not just Relic Blade, but and just different avenues. We're working on a lot of just fun little stuff. And we got pack 3 coming out for the Legends line. Pack 4 is going to come out with it. A little spoiler there. Yeah. So we're going to drop them both at the same time because we're just too anxious to get them out. And we have a lot of international buyers that want to buy in, but they hate buying these onesie twosies because shipping has just gotten out of control. Yeah, if you're going overseas. Unbelievable how much it's gotten up in the last year.
Cool. Well, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate you having you here. Anything else you want
to
say before?
No, I would say if you haven't checked out Confrontation, come over to the Facebook page, Confrontation Fanatics 3.5. If anything, you'll see some amazing art, amazing miniatures that, you know, if you don't want to play Confrontation, you could throw them in some of the games that you do play and just wow people on the table. So
awesome. Yeah. And the only thing I'll add is we do actually have a Discord. So I'll put that in the show notes. Swing on by. It's a real small community, very relaxed. But if you want to talk about your favorite dead games or want to come on and talk about Confrontation, swing on by and say hi. Love to have you.
Hey, and thanks. Thank you guys for having me. Absolutely.
Now, thank you for swinging by. We appreciate you coming by to talk to us. On that note, I'm Owen.
I'm Chris.
I'm Kyle.
Thanks. Take it easy. Intro music is Axe to Mouth by Pulp 45, which is Owen's old band. Outro music is Control My Fate by Ataraxia, which is Chris's old band. All songs used with permission. If you like what you hear, please like or subscribe. Thanks.